Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard from FanRag Sports and NDTScouting.com. And Trevor Sikkema is mobile today. Of all days, Jason Pierre-Paul gets traded to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Trevor Sikkema can't come on the show to talk about it. So we got to discuss this first. We're going to talk about prospects that I've been watching lately and things like that, but we got to talk about this Jason Pierre-Paul news because this is huge. I mean, the ramifications it could have for the draft, obviously super intriguing there. The ramifications it could have for teams like the Bills and the Browns and things like that. So there's a lot to discuss here. You know, I've made the case and written about it on NDTScouting.com. You can check it out. The Giants can't overthink it. They got to take their quarterback at number two. I stand by that all the way. But we got to look at realities of the situation too. The reality of the situation is this. The Giants need a pass rusher now, and Bradley Chubb fits a lot of the size requirements and things like that that Dave Gettleman prefers in his defensive ends. Now, Gettleman hasn't prioritized the edge rusher position in drafts since from the 2013, he was GM in Carolina for 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, so 5 years of drafts. The highest he took a defensive end was Coney Ealy, and he took one in Deshaun Hall. Those are the only two day one or day two defensive ends that he took. He's never drafted one in the first round. So you have to look at all that when you gauge that. Remember, he took Vernon Butler in the first round. He took Shaq Thompson in the first round when both those positions were filled. So he's a guy that prioritizes interior defensive line play. He prioritizes linebacker. Having said that, there's something to be said for the fact that he hit on those interior defensive line guys, and they provided a lot of the rush for Carolina, and that may not be the case with the Giants. And Betcher is coming from a place where he just had Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones. So this dude obviously, you know, would like to have top-tier pass rushers. So there's going to be some balancing of that. I don't think Gettleman will just continue to go on not drafting edge defenders in the first round and not really paying them big bucks and things like that. I don't think that's what's going to happen here. But I do think that there's some wiggle room with Betcher or with Gettleman to look at this roster and say, we're paying Pierre-Paul a lot of money, and if we can get him off the books, let's get him off the books, because we could draft a guy, pay him less, we can draft a guy second and third round, and he can be, I mean, let's be honest, Pierre-Paul hasn't been great, and that could be a part of this. Like, we're kind of ignoring that part of it, but it's not like this dude has lit it on fire. He's been pretty absent early on in seasons, especially big moments. I mean, he's gotten a lot of his production when he's gotten it against really subpar talent and kind of stacked it all up in one game. I mean, this hasn't been a guy who's dominated snap to snap. He's not what he was before the hand injury. He's just not the same player. You know, 7 sacks in 2016, 2017, 8.5 sacks last year, 1 sack in 2015. He played in 8 games, that started 8 games that year. So it wasn't like he missed the whole season or anything. So, you know, when you look at Pierre-Paul and what he did last season, he had 3 sacks against Denver. Working against, I think it was Menelik Watson in that game. He had 2 against Washington, and then he had 2 the last 2 weeks of the season when things were decided for the Giants. So you're looking for a guy that got his sacks in big-time moments, and you guys know I chart high-quality, low-quality sacks, clean-up sacks, things like that. And Pierre-Paul has not scored well in either of the last 2 years, especially for what they're paying him. So it could just be a simple business move. I mean, obviously they're going to replace him, but there's definitely the possibility that this is a business move, that Pierre-Paul wasn't producing the way that he was being paid to produce, which is unquestionably true, that there really wasn't a ceiling for him to get back to that at this point. They've seen a large sample size at this point from Pierre-Paul with his hand injury. They know what he's going to be. I mean, this guy started 12 games in 2016 and 16 games last year. So they know what they're getting from Pierre-Paul at this point, and it's mid-level production from a pass rusher. That's what he's going to give you. He's going to give you between 6 and 9 sacks, probably, depending on who his matchups are. When he gets a favorable matchup against an overwhelmed opponent, he does convert speed to power still well, but that's really all he has. He doesn't have a lot of moves at this point. There's not a lot of variety to the way Pierre-Paul wins. So I think he's a solid pass rusher. I wouldn't put him in tier 1 or tier 2 of pass rushers in the NFL. Maybe tier 3. We'd have to lay it out, but I don't think he's on that type of a level. But I think he's clearly a good player. Clearly helps Tampa Bay, and what they moved up in the 4th round, I think, and then traded away a 3rd round pick for him. Yeah, I mean, heck, I do that for a solid pass rusher who's a good run defender, who's not going to hurt you when he's on the field, and is used to playing like 90% of the snaps every season. I mean, Pierre-Paul plays a ton for the Giants. I mean, heck, I take that for sure. So I think if you're looking from the Bucs situation, I love the move because they didn't give up a ton for him. You got to go get pass rushers. That team needed them. They've got Vinnie Curry. They've got Noah Spence. They've got Pierre Paul now. They've got Bo Allen inside next to Gerald McCoy. This is a defensive front that is definitely looks a lot different, and Tampa Bay did what they needed to do. I know Trevor will have thoughts and opinions on that. I know I'm sure he's excited about the direction they're moving in. We'll talk with him maybe about that tomorrow when we do Fan Friday. But for now, you look at this situation just from a Giants perspective, I don't know that it necessarily means all signs point to Bradley Chubb here. It certainly opens the door for it, where I don't think the door was open before at all. Now it opens the door for it. Now you got to consider Bradley Chubb. You got to consider Quentin Nelson still Saquon Barkley, and of course, quarterback, whoever that might be. You know, Josh Allen or Josh Rosen probably seems to be likely. So Giants are in a tough spot. I don't know that this necessarily was the move they needed to make to feel good about drafting Chubb, but I think it definitely, you know, he's going to get strong consideration there. He can play from a 2- and 3-point stance. I know I saw some people saying, oh, Pierre Paul just didn't fit, you know, Betcher's system. I don't think that's necessarily true. I don't think it's all about that. I think he just wasn't producing. I think that was part of it too. They're paying him a ton of money. That was part of it. The last regime shouldn't have given him that money probably. And I think that the desire to get that off the books is a huge part of this. I don't know if it's everything, but it's a huge part of it. And I don't disagree with the move because I don't think that's changing for Pierre Paul. He just turned 29. Yeah, in January, this is kind of where he's at in his career. He's going into his 9th season. I mean, this is just who Jason Pierre-Paul is, I think, at this time. So I think it's a good decision to move on from him. I would love to get a little bit more than the third, but I don't know that you can at this point. His production's tailed off. I mean, he hasn't hit double-digit sacks for 3 straight seasons. You know, you can't really pay a premium for a guy like that just because he's a name. I mean, even if you look at Pierre-Paul before the injury, he was a highly inconsistent guy. I mean, 12.5 sacks in 2014 was a great season. 2 sacks the year before, so played in 11 games. 6.5 sacks in 16 games in 2012. 16.5 sacks in 2011. So, I mean, you just never really knew what you were getting. And then 4.5 sacks his rookie year, and he played in all 16 games, but he wasn't a starter. So he's kind of always been up and down a little bit, even when he was fully healthy. And now it's just probably never going to be the same player. So both sides I get it from. I get the perspective. But the question with the Giants is how much does this change things? I think people think of Pierre Paul as this massive difference maker that can't be replaced in the Giants. And I agree. Right now, the Giants don't have anybody on the roster to replace Pierre Paul. I mean, you have Vernon on one side. And not that the rest of their edge rushers are bad per se, but there's nobody that gives that level of an impact, a good combination, I think. And not that he had this huge impact, but guys like, you know, they just signed Kareem Martin. I don't even know if he's going to necessarily play fully on the edge. Avery Moss is there. I like Avery Moss. But again, he's a guy that's going to do his best work as an interior pass rusher, capable run defender. You know, Romeo Okwara, Kerry Wynn, these guys are great backups to have. But if you play, and this will probably change with the new regime, but if you are going to play these guys a lot of snaps, and Chandler Jones played a ton last year, you know, for Betcher's defense, so he may still rely heavily on at least Vernon. But if you're going to get a guy to play a ton of snaps, you're going to want to prioritize the position early on. So we'll see. They could opt to go with a rookie in the second or third rounds and kind of develop him from there and see how things progress and then maybe address it early next year's draft if they want to move in that direction. I don't know. I don't know exactly how this is going to play out. It's clear that Betcher valued edge defenders and edge rusher presence more than Todd Bowles did when he was in Arizona. And so I would imagine he'll bring some of that influence, and he and Gettleman would have an understanding on that, given the fact that he came to New York with Gettleman as the man in charge. So this will be a big draft, and we've said this from the beginning, no matter what the position, but it will really be a big draft to determining what Gettleman's goals are in New York. And obviously with the media attention here and everything, it's a huge pick. I mean, it's arguably the biggest pick in the draft. Everybody's going to forget about Sam Darnold going to the Browns, A, because we've expected it for a long time, but B, because all the intrigue is around what are the Giants going to do? What's going to happen with the Giants pick? You know, are they going to take a running back? Are they going to turn down all these draft assets to take a running back or a guard or even a defensive end? Or are they going to take their quarterback of the future? And then do they try and move Eli Manning? And so the New York media is going to have a field day with all this because there's so much going on here. And rightfully so, because it's a huge draft for Gettleman's longevity here, for the future success of the New York Giants, to be able to get a quarterback at that spot. It's huge, man. I mean, to be able to go from a guy that's done what Eli Manning's done there to transition smoothly to a guy like, I mean, Josh Rosen's going to be on the board. That's the best quarterback in the class, I think. So I think that's a huge step in the right direction. So we'll see what they do. You know my feelings. I'm saying Rosen all the way. It's not that Chubb or Barkley or Nelson don't make them a better team right now. They clearly do. but none of those guys can give you what Rosen could give you over the course of many years as the face of the franchise, you know, and allow you to be able to move Eli Manning for draft capital. Even if they opted not to do that, it's still something that they can do. It's still a possibility that gets opened up at some point down the road, even if Rosen goes out and has a Carson Wentz like camp, then maybe you pull what the Eagles did with Sam Bradford. So possibilities are endless. Lots of different opportunities there for the Giants to make a splash and to change up the dynamic of the first round. How does it change things? I mean, let's say it does change things and Bradley Chubb is going to be a consideration at number two. What if he's the pick at number two? I mean, obviously the Bills would have to be scrambling to get up to four. I don't think the Broncos are trading back, so I think they've got to get to four because the Jets are going to take a quarterback and there's going to be two available for the Bills. And I got to think that they like one enough to move up for him. Otherwise, why get to 12? Why do all this to try and send? I mean, you pay an A.J. McCarron, but that they're not paying him money that would expect him to be your starter. So it's an interesting spot for Buffalo, but they've got to make a move. That's going to be the most anticipated thing until the draft happens. When the draft happens, it'll be what are the Giants going to do? But until that point, you know, I really think it'll be what are the Bills going to do? Because the Bills have to make a move now. We're in wait and see mode. I know Bills fans are feeling the same way. So opens up possibilities for them. I mean, Denver would obviously feel good about a quarterback potentially landing with them, and I would guess it would be Baker Mayfield, and I would guess they would be pretty okay with that. But it does seem to suggest the Giants aren't thinking quarterback, and they aren't thinking, you know, they aren't thinking about necessarily replacing Eli Manning at the very least. So we'll see what direction they move in. I wanted to talk a little bit about guys that I've been watching recently. Trevor was going to talk about guys he's been watching recently too, but I've been watching the tight end crop. I'm not very impressed. I'm sorry if your team needs a tight end. And the reason I really wanted to talk about them was somebody said the other day, like, you guys have barely talked about tight ends on the podcast. I was like, yeah, because we don't want to bore y'all. But I mean, everybody wants to get excited about every position group every year. And if it's hard to get excited about a position group initially, we will always find ways to push names up the radar, take them with the context of their position group, and elevate them to status that they don't necessarily deserve or their tape doesn't necessarily deserve. We do that every single year. Teams do it with players every single year. It's a weak this, you know, weak tight end class, a weak tackle class, a weak quarterback class. Bad ones get pushed up the board to fill a need. Teams reach, they convince themselves, if we don't take this guy, there won't ever be anybody better available in this draft. So we got to go ahead and we got to pull the trigger now. Tight end, it's less likely to happen. We're not going to have three guys in the first round. We're not going to have anybody in the first round. But this is a group, you know, to me, I don't know that I'll have, I'm pretty certain I won't have anybody above, you know, late day two, round three type of range. That will be the highest grade I've given a tight end. Right now, Dallas Goedert, Tyler Conklin, Mike Gesicki, Mark Andrews, they're all extremely close on my board. Hayden Hurst a little bit behind them. All those guys are like a point, half a point off for me in my numerical grading scale. Goddard's testing comes up on the 30th. That's huge for him. I've always said this, testing for small school guys, massive, massive deal. You have to prove that you're a high-end athlete to translate it to the NFL, you know. And I like some things about Goddard on tape. You know, I think all these guys are, when you compare them to last year's group or first or second round type impacts, you know, you're looking at really good to great starters. You know, I don't think any of these guys are that. The guy with the biggest ceiling to me is probably Gesicki, and if Goddard tests how I think he will, which is at least pretty solid, I think, and Goddard could be factored in there as well. But the problem I have with Gesicki, where I think that he's going to be a risky pick. He just is not physical in any way. I mean, dudes take liberties with him all over the field. As a blocker, he is timid. He steps into blocks. He does not bring full intensity. As a route runner, he gets rerouted by corners all the time on tape. He gets knocked off balance. He gets jammed. He never initiates the contact. I just think that's a concern. When you watched him in the Senior Bowl game, when the contact was allowed and that kind of stuff happened, I mean, it happened a lot. He got knocked out. He got knocked down. He got pushed around. I think he's getting a big boy in the NFL. I think he's a great athlete. Even if you split him out wide as a receiver, I don't think he necessarily gets away from that. The one thing I love about Gesicki is I think he has a trump card that the other tight ends in the class don't necessarily have. Like, Goddard's good at some things. You've seen him make some tough catches. You've also seen him, you know, he's flubbed a lot of catches his time in there at South Dakota State too. So, you know, I didn't see any type of trump card with Hayden Hurst at all, to be honest. I don't really see one with Mark Andrews, as much as I know he was my tight end one coming into the year, but I finished his grading and he actually finished worse than I thought he would. He's in that really late round three stage, like one of my last round three grades right now. I just don't see a trump card with those guys, but with Gesicki, his ability to win in the air and win at the catch point are definitely a trump card. So I like that about him. There's something he can hang his hat on for sure. He's in very definite play to be my tight end one. And again, Trevor and I will release our rankings right before the draft, our final rankings. But even as a tight end one, we're talking about a round three grade. Because I just don't, I mean, as a blocker, he offers you absolutely nothing. Even as a route runner, he doesn't consistently separate. Like the explosiveness, he rounds off his patterns and things like that. He struggles to sync and change direction quickly. I know his combine scores and agilities blew my mind, but I went back and watched the tape. I watched all 22. I watched his routes completely. I just do not see that level of separation. Now, he can separate in the air, and so it helps negate some of that, and he makes some great plays on the ball in the air. But I think there's enough concerns with him where I'm too scared to take him higher than the third. So that's kind of where I'm at with him. I think Tyler Conklin might be the hidden gem of this entire class. He is in play for tight end one. I'm hoping to get one or two more games of his tape at Central Michigan. But, man, when you watched him against big schools that they played, like Oklahoma State in 2016, he was one of the best players on the field. And who else? They played somebody else in 2016 as well. Forget who it was right now. But, again, he was one of the best players on the field. It was another one of the Power 5 schools. And he really continued to stand out and put up big production in those games, but also look great on the tape and suffered from bad quarterback play. Could have been even better. So I think his ball skills are really good. He has really nice physicality within his route stems where he's able to tilt a corner and then get back on the other side of on his other hip. He catches the ball away from his frame so well, man. This guy's hands are off the charts good. I think he's a good enough athlete. The only thing, he's just not fast. He's not fast at all. And he ran a 4.8. And I don't think he threatens the field really vertically that well at all. So he can make tough catches over his shoulder for sure. He can get step to step for a guy and he can elevate him. He's got 38-inch hops. He's a former basketball player. He does use his body well at the catch point to box out. So it's not the end of the world. But, you know, I think if he could, if he was like a 4.6 guy, I honestly think Tyler Conklin would be what tight end one for sure. And we would be talking about him in the second round for sure. So I don't know where he comes off the board, honestly, but he's probably going to have a third round grade for me. I'm a big fan of his game. And I think he offers the tools and the toughness. I mean, to me, he's the meanest guy of this tight end group. I know Hayden Hurst gets some love for that. I think he is tough, but I don't see that toughness from Andrews. I don't see that toughness from Gesicki. I don't see that toughness from Goddard, but I see that toughness from Conklin. Like he gets after you. He's physical. He's not perfect as a blocker yet, but I think he can get there. He's got great size, great length. I think he's got all the kind of the tools you're looking for to develop into a guy that plays more downs than not. So I think he's one of the guys that I'll probably pound the table for if a team really needs a tight end in the mid rounds, but I wouldn't expect a run on these guys early. I know some people like Ian Thomas. I admit there were some flashes on his tape. I thought he was terrible in Mobile, but his tape looked a little bit better than I thought it would. I could get on board with him in the mid rounds, I think. He also does some decent things as a blocker too, but has to improve there. Not dissimilar from Conklin in that way. Brings the right mentality and has the tools, just isn't totally polished yet. But I also like Durham Smythe from Notre Dame. You know, here's a guy that I think is, again, physical, did some really good things working off combination blocks, getting to the second level, wasn't targeted hardly at all, but showed really good ball skills when he was. Just the matter of fact, he's just a subpar athlete, you know, and I hoped he'd be a little bit better, and the combine showed he was just pretty, you know, this guy's an average to below average athlete, not a speedster, ran in the 4.8s, not going to stretch the field really, kind of heavy strider, but he looks really, I mean, he's not like hefty or anything like that for a tight end. Like, he looks really well developed and everything. So I think that Smythe is going to have a nice career in the NFL and contribute right away. I just don't know that there's as high a ceiling as I originally hoped would be there. And then guys like Chris Herndon, super interesting to me. If he comes back off that knee injury, I thought he showed some things after the catch when he was playing behind Njoku, but how he recovers from that injury will be key. I think Marcus Baugh is a good tight end for the mid rounds, a guy that can block a little bit, catch a little bit. Again, really kind of average to below average athlete, not going to be a tight end one or really wow in that way. One guy that's just totally I don't get at all is Troy Fumagalli. I think he's a late day three type of guy. I mean, it would, if he goes undrafted, it wouldn't shock me. He has good hands, but he just doesn't do anything really at a high level. Well, he doesn't block at a high level. He doesn't make contested catches consistently. He's not a yards after catch guy. He's very average from an athlete standpoint. So I'm not really sure what he gives you that you can't get in, you know, undrafted guys for the most part. So that's kind of my feelings on the tight end class. Touched on Andrews and Goddard just a little bit. I want to see what Goddard runs. I really wanted to see a trump card with Andrews. I just didn't really see. He's not the fastest. He's doesn't really separate that quickly. He's a pretty polished route runner, but I think the offense opened up some windows for him too. So I like some things that he does. He's probably going to be tight end 1-3, somewhere in that range for me. But I just can't totally get on board with his skill set as being definitely better than the rest of them, which I expected to be. I expected him to be tight end 1, but the grading just didn't really bear that out when I got to the numbers. So we'll be back tomorrow. We got Fan Friday. We'll take all your questions. We're going to talk more, I'm sure. Trevor will want to sound off on the Jason Pierre-Paul stuff and what the Bucks have done in free agency and all that good stuff. So we'll be sure to talk with you about all that tomorrow. So until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.